It's hard having kids because it's boring. That really is the hardest part of having kids. It's boring having kids. You gotta play kid games. You gotta play board games. Little kid board games where you... And you go... Tick, 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 tick. You got a six, honey. One... Two... Three... It's just here. Just go here. It's just... Daddy, I'm learning. I know, you're going to grow up stupid because I'm bored. I can't take it, baby. I can't watch it. I'm bored more than I love you. I just... Come on.
Parenting is awkward. It's awkward for parents. It's awkward for the kids. Because we're trying to figure this thing out as we go along. And we're really only become experts after they're gone. And so it's awkward the whole way through this. And every now and then, you're going to bump into stuff you don't know how to handle. You're not sure what to say. Situation is something you've not faced. One of those stories that I like the most is one that Irwin McManus tells. He's author, pastor of Mosaic up in L.A. And he talks about when his kid went to church camp first time. He gets home from camp, and he's tucking him in for bed, and he goes to shut the light off. And the kid says, "No, Daddy, don't shut the light off. I'm scared." And he thought, well, huh, I wonder why, because we crossed that bridge, you know, a while ago. So he says, "What are you scared of?" He says, "Well, they told some stories that scared me at camp." And he thought, oh, yeah, I remember that. You try to freak each other out, and ghost stories and about the bad, weird man in the woods and all kinds of stuff like this. And so he sat down. He said, "I'll just kind of work through him." He says, "Well, tell me, you know, what scared you?" He said, "Well, they said that there's a devil, and his name is Satan, and he wants to capture my heart." I was thinking, huh, why didn't I send him to pagan camp where they just tell ghost stories, you know, because this is true, and huh, what do I say? So he starts to, you know, work through it with him about how he doesn't need to be afraid, and finally, his son said, "Dad, will you pray that Jesus will protect me?" He thought about it and he said, "No, but I will pray that Jesus will make you dangerous so that if you ever walk into a situation or a room and there's a devil there, that he will run because you are dangerous for Jesus." I love that. I love that idea of parenting our kids toward confidence in a sometimes scary world, rather than, you know, that if you're really good, nothing will ever harm you, because that's just not the truth. How do we focus our kids toward that kind of life? That's really what this series is about, and about the relationships that have a dramatic impact on the trajectory of our kids' lives, and as we'll see, on our own as well. So glad that you're here. Grab the outline if you're at any one of our churches today, whether you're in Venice Beach or Mission Valley or Imperial Beach or Tijuana, Salt Lake City, or online. Glad that you are here today and excited about that. Matter of fact, let me tell you a couple of little things that are coming up. Tomorrow evening in Oceanside, Carlsbad area, there is a gathering of people as we begin to put a launch team together for East Lake Church in Carlsbad. So if you know folks up there, you can point them to our website and they can get the information. And then we're also in the process of moving toward a church plant up in Azusa as well, East Lake Church Azusa. So very fun, cool stuff going on there. Yay, way to go. Thanks, Mom. Anyway, as we walk through this series, I think it'll be encouraging, but let me first of all remind you of what we talked about last week a little bit. Two variables we looked at were authority and friendship, and then we looked at those four stages of parenting: the nurse, the king, queen, the coach, and the friendship, and then that's over a lifetime, and you can see how the authority and friendship, authority ramps up, then down, friendship glides up and lasts a lifetime. That's the goal. That's what we're hoping for. But as you approach those different stages, sometimes you're not sure, is it time for me to move from king to coach? And you look for little indicators. One guy tweeted this. It was his indicator. It was time to move to coach phase. He said, my 8-year-old son said, I wonder what a wedgie feels like. Now he knows. That's great coaching toward junior high. That's wonderful. As nurse, our influence really has little to do with authority. And it has everything to do with size and position. I can pick up that kid, move that kid over here, buckle that kid up, and they just pretty much have to go wherever I decide. I'm bigger, I'm dad, I'm bigger, I'm mom. The problem is eventually that goes away. You cannot just parent or influence your child based on size. I remember when I began to see that shift taking place. I don't remember how old my son was, but we were passing each other in the hallway at the house, and as he walked by, I just popped him in the back of the head and said, come on. And he did. And he hurt me. And I knew that that phase was over. And the problem was is that he also knew it at that moment. And so he sort of became like this ninja Kato hiding in places, and I never knew where he was going to come from. And there was a great deal of injury. So I did the only thing that I could, which was fight filthy. And it was the only way to protect myself. I'm grateful that I have grandkids at this point based on some of the things I had to do to protect myself. At any rate, that'll catch up to the rest of you later. All right. another example of that is Nate McPeak. I've known him his whole life. My wife was in the delivery room when Nate was born. Today, he's huge. He's a big kid. I used to see Nate, I'd grab him, give him a noogie, and hey, Nate, what's going on? And now, I don't do that. But I learned to back off before he got so big. You see, now when I see Nate coming, I just sort of bow and put out my hand, hope he doesn't crush it. See, that authority based on size or position, it runs out at some point. The goal is to be lifelong friends, but you cannot skip that king and queen and coach phase and jump right to the friendship. So I want to look at three focusing questions today that I think will help you. You can ask these throughout your parenting career. These are good no matter the age of your kids, the stage of your parenting. And they can work sort of like levers in your life. And you know what a lever is you put it down here and you push up here and it gives you greater power to move something. Well, we want to be able to move our kids in a direction, in a trajectory that's good. And so there's different things that we can do. And so let's look at these three. Number one, what are you doing to leverage their relationship outside your home? We'll talk more about this next week, but it's not just keeping bad kids away. It's also helping them to connect with the right kind of people that will move them forward in their life in a positive way, in a great direction. I am thankful for the youth pastors that my kids had. They were some of those folks that leveraged our relationship with our kids. They would connect with people that I knew would give them good advice, that would care for them. And the reality is they needed people to talk to other than mom and dad. Because, you know, I know that for some of you, you're going, oh, but I want my kids to come to me about everything. They're not going to. Did you talk to your parents about everything? Oh no, but I'm a way better parent than my wah. Your kids aren't gonna do it. And so you want to leverage those other relationships. Now, if you're a student right now, you can lean over to your mom or dad and say, that's not true, mom. I would talk to you about everything. Go ahead and just lie. It's a dispensation for that right now. Number two, what are you doing to deepen their relationship with God? This parenting thing, it requires a lot of wisdom. It requires some guidance. And so, parents, we need to take time out for solitude and quiet so that we can listen when God wants to lead us. Because we want our kids to deepen their relationship. But let me just talk to students for a second. You know, in America, we have extended the age of children so far that you can be 15, 16, 17 years old and still think that, well, I don't need to worry about that kind of stuff in my life. Yeah, you need to go ahead and understand that Your relationship with God is in your hands. And you need to take that on and not just look to your parents' relationship with God. It's yours. And you need to be growing that relationship on your own. This leading kids is a challenge, but God is faithful to guide us, whether you're a parent or a student. Number three, what are you doing to enrich their relationship with you? See, parenting is primarily a relationship. It's not a task. There are plenty of tasks that go along with this relationship, but it's not a task. It's so easy to begin to see parenting in just the tasks. You have this baby, and so you feed the baby, and you burp the baby, and then you change the baby, and then you put a new outfit on the baby because he blew out everything, and then you wash the baby, and then you change the baby, and then you feed the baby, and it's just repeat, repeat, repeat all day, repeat, repeat, repeat. And then finally at night, you put the baby to bed, and you have some rest for maybe 2 hours. You are tired. And then there's the little kid stage, grade school age, and you get them up and you get them dressed and then you give them something to eat and then you take them to school. And then you pick them up from school and then you take them to soccer and then you take them to music class and then you take them to the tutoring thing and then you take them to the next activity and the next activity and the next activity. And you get home and you put some food in their mouth and then you wash them up and you put them to bed and the parenting's done for the day. Fast forward now to the teen years and they don't get up. Because you haven't trained them yet how to use an alarm clock. Stupid parent. Still trying to go and be their nursemaid and wake them up and wake them up and wake them up. Just make the wake-up process so painful that they never want you to ever do it again. Buckets of water. Whatever it takes. Whatever it takes. This is good advice from the pastor, okay? So, you know, they get up. You give them something to eat. They're off to school. They come home, you try and talk to them. How was your day? Fine. Everything okay? Good. Tell me about your day. It's all right. You know, it's that whole wonderful exchange of conversation. And then, you know, maybe they begin to eat as soon as they come in the house. They don't stop until dinner. And then, of course, they pick at it. Maybe you talk about homework or something else, and then it's all what time you have to be in, and then while they're away, you check their phone records and Facebook page, and, you know, they come home, go to sleep, parenting done for the day. It's real easy to forget the relationship in the midst of all the tasks, but the relationship is really what's primary. Thankfully, we have a source beyond ourselves when we don't know what we're doing or how to move forward. Proverbs 3. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not depend on your own understanding. Seek His will in all you do, and He will show you which path to take. What a wonderful verse to apply to parenting at whatever stage you're in. So first I want to look at this parent-child relationship and then touch on how your relationship with Jesus as a parent impacts your kids. So here's two clarifying statements. First of all, the quality of your relationship with your children will determine the weight of your influence. The quality of your relationship with your children will determine the weight of your influence. And you know this is true because the quality of your relationship with your parents right now, to a great extent, determines the level of influence or access that you give them. For example, if you had an absentee parent, maybe your dad wasn't in the home because of a divorce, he just wasn't around, so you don't have a relationship that's deep at all, and maybe sort of surface, and, you know, now you're an adult. It would seem probably a little strange to you if all of a sudden your dad wanted to insert himself into your life and give you all kinds of direction and advice. You probably would not take it very seriously. Why? Because there's no foundation of relationship built over the years that you can continue to build on. On the flip side of that, some of you have a great relationship with your parents as an adult now. And the reason for that is there is that foundation. Not that they were perfect, but you have something to build on and move forward. Jesus says He wants us to be friends. Look at John 15. You are My friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you slaves because a master doesn't confide in his slaves. Now you are my friends, since I have told you everything the Father told me. If you're taking notes, underline that last phrase. I have told you everything the Father told me. You know what that's called? Discipleship. That's what discipleship is. And let me reduce it to a little phrase. Live, learn, pass it on. Live, learn, pass it on. Find a place on your outline to write that. Because that's what we do as parents. We live, we learn, we pass it on. If we try to continue to influence from this authority position for too long, it erodes the relationship. You have to be careful. I remember we were driving down the road one day, and all of a sudden, Ryan's going, McDonald's, McDonald's, stop at McDonald's. I want to get some, I want some food at McDonald's. McDonald's, McDonald's, McDonald's. I said, we can't make it. McDonald's, McDonald's, we got to go. Fine, whatever. He was driving, it was his car, so. If you try to take it too far, you end up, you know, with immature kids. Some parents, when they begin to realize that they're losing that authority, they can't just give them directives any longer and they just do it, they resort to something else. And it's often guilt or bribery. Yeah, some of you know exactly what I'm talking about because your parents have done it to you and you've even started to do it yourself. Guilt or bribery? What do you mean? What's that look like? We never see you anymore. You don't call. We haven't seen the grandkids in like 6 hours. And so what do? Call. Come by. Or they do something else. Hey, would you come by? I have something I want to give you. And they, you know, come by because I've got this thing and I wanted to give it. And you want it. You're going, ooh. But you go to get it, and there's these strings attached. You see, they're using guilt or bribery to get you to behave in a certain way. And you know what it ends up doing? It erodes the relationship. It erodes respect. It doesn't work. And you end up in a place where you're really trying to figure this thing out with, how do I quit feeling guilty, or how do I get what they have? And that becomes a further eroding of the relationship. How do you avoid it? Well, there's a verse that at least gives us an indicator here in Ephesians 6:4. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Exasperate, frustrate. Don't do that. And we're going to go through a list of the kinds of things that do exasperate our kids. Frustrates them. And you might not be a parent. And you're going to spot your parents in maybe one or more of these things. Some of them will be like, kind of that happened. Others could be things that are deeply painful to you. And I just want you to know that you need to take your hurt to Jesus and let him begin to heal you, because you don't want to repeat the cycle. And it's only from a point of healing that we get free from our own awkward family photos. Sometimes, which are very, very painful. So let's look at these. First of all, unclear boundaries. When we give an instruction that's just not specific, don't watch too much TV. Don't spend too much time on the computer. Okay. What's too much? Who knows? The kid will decide. I like this one. Don't eat too much candy. There is no amount of candy that's too much for a kid. Don't eat too much candy. How will they ever know what's too much? Because the only time they think it's too much is when they can't stuff it in because they're vomiting it out. Then maybe they'll consider that it's too much candy. We need to be specific when it comes to clear boundaries. Then unpredictable discipline. You know what? That's when the kid does this thing and you come down hard. You lay down the law. There's a real heavy-duty consequence for that behavior. And then a week later, they do the same behavior, and you go, yeah, well, don't do it again. It's, which is it? What is this unpredictable discipline? Why do we do that? I'll tell you one reason. Parenting is tiring. These kids are wearing us out. So why do we get, you know, this unpredictable discipline? Because we're sick of them. I can't believe they just did the same thing again. I don't even care. Whatever. Play in the freeway. You've been there. If you're a parent, you know exactly what I'm talking about. By the way, I want to give a shout out to single parents. Tough job. Tough job. And, you know, you're kind of trying to navigate, you know, this whole thing yourself. You're trying to fulfill, you know, two roles. And it is a very difficult job. I want to encourage you to don't try and do it alone. Get in community. Get in a growth group and make some friends, maybe in a similar situation. Help each other out. It is hugely important. I know because I grew up with a single mom. And, you know, we had six boys, one girl. Now, some of those were out of the house and moved far, far away. They wanted no part of it. But, you know, it was hard. Fortunately, I was super easy. And a great, great kid. Another reason that we do this is because we want our kids to like us. We're moving past that king coach stage, trying to be right to friendship. And as a result, you know, it's time for discipline. Well, I said this is the consequence for that, but oh, if I ground you, then you're going to miss the event, and I don't want you to miss it, and I don't want you to hate me if you miss the event, because it's such a big event. Parents, whenever you feel like that, this is one of those parenting things I often share, go look in a mirror and slap yourself, okay? You just need to do that. Don't move past that friend stage or to that friend stage too quickly. And then unbalanced criticism. In other words, criticism that is not balanced by praise. And when I say criticism, I'm talking about constructive criticism, where you're actually giving them information, helping them to grow, to be better human beings. Those are all good things, but not mean criticism. You know, so you can't balance just mean criticism with praise. It's not, you can't go up to your kid and say, you're ugly, but you have good breath. Okay, you know, that's not going to get it done at all. This constructive criticism is super important, and so is regular praise. Otherwise, what they're going to do is they're going to say, you know, all my mom or all my dad ever does is criticize. They just pick at me. I can't do anything right in their eyes. And so they get frustrated and they give up. And then unreasonable demands. It's unreasonable to not give your kids some room to express their feelings, their frustrations, and their opinions. Now, in appropriate ways at appropriate times, but there needs to be a place where they can grow in learning how to share their feelings, frustrations, and opinions. Then learn it with you. And then making demands of them that are beyond their skill set or their life stage. This is what I'm having to relearn, because now I've got grandkids. And so I'll be there, and the grandkids, and you know, one of them will be doing something. Knock it off. What is that about? What are you doing? Stop whining. And then my wife will come and say something like, he's four. That's what a four-year-old does. Oh, tell him to grow up. You know, so I'm having to kind of relearn some of this stuff. I see it too with kids that are in sports. And you know, the sports parents, and you see some dad out there at baseball practice, and he's, come on, get down on the ball, don't pop up there, don't back out of the batter's box when the pitcher's, yeah, they're doing all this stuff because, you know, I want you to be a great athlete like I wasn't. Yeah, you know who you are, Dad. You know, and you look at the kid's got two left feet and can't throw. And you know, this kid is going to be a musician, you know, that's all he's got, you know, only hope. As they get older and you're making demands, you're saying this is the way it is, you need to give them the reason. the reason beyond, because I said so. I encourage you to use that as long as you can. But at some point, it won't work anymore. And so you need to give them a reason. Now, I'm not saying they're going to like the reason, but it will help them to not become frustrated. That it's not just some random thing. There's a method to the madness that's going on there in your house. And then unspoken expectations. You know, those things that just sort of linger over a home or a family, that this is what we expect, that can be debilitating. You know, if every time you walk in the house or you're getting ready to head out and mom comes over and says, you know, honey, you'd look so much better if, and they want to fix you. Or, you know, it might be better if you could be just a little bit more like your sister, your brother, your cousin, Pastor Mike, you know. Or I like this one. You know, your cousin Eric is doing so well in school. And you suck, you know, that's kind of the what's being said, this unspoken expectation or comparison. And what those really communicate is, I don't accept you. It's frustrating. Undeserved or unresolved anger. Have you ever yelled at your kids because you were mad at your spouse or your boss? Yes, you have. Yes, you have, you bunch of sinners. You've done that. So how do you resolve it then? You don't just leave that stuff undone. You need to resolve it. We talked a little bit about this last week. So what do? You go to them. You say, I'm really sorry. I came from this level 10 blow up on the job, and I walked into this level 2 situation, and I treated it like that. And I'm sorry. Please forgive me, kids. And some of you are thinking, no. Never show weakness in front of the enemy. But it's important, because if you want your kids to be able to do that, you need to model that. Well, when? Don't worry, you're going to have plenty of time and room to repent, because you make mistakes. So only do it when you blow it, which is going to give you plenty of opportunity on a daily basis. Don't exasperate them, but bring them up. That little phrase, bring them up, in the Greek, the original language, it's just one word. And it's a word that could also be translated as nourish. Don't frustrate them, nourish them. That's what this parenting thing is all about. Here's the second clarifying statement. The quality of your relationship with Jesus influences their future relationships. The quality of the parents' relationship with Jesus has great influence on all of their relationships. Their relationship with you, their relationship with other people, their relationship with God. And I want to encourage you, parents, take on this task of deepening your child's relationship with God. Well, that's the church's job. No, it's not. We want to support that. We want to come alongside that, but we also want to help parents to do that job. We want to encourage you as well in this parenting role. But in order to do that, you need to be experiencing a relationship with Jesus. It needs to be something that you're continuing to grow in. Look at Deuteronomy 6. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, and when you lie down, and when you get up, and when you drive them to school, and to swimming, and to soccer, and to baseball, and to, you get the idea. Make it normal. In other words, during everyday life, live, learn, pass it on. What you're learning in your relationship with Jesus, the things that you're excited about, well, I really don't have anything to say, then press in. take your next right step toward God. And then live, learn, pass it on. Pray together with your kids, not just at night. Oh, I really don't know how to pray. Do you know how to talk? That's all prayer is. Just include Jesus in the conversation. There's a kid that's been bugging me at school. He's kind of a bully. And so you say, Jesus, help Billy to be able to, you know, walk away from that situation. Or Jesus, you know, help Billy to punch his lights out. I don't know. You pray however you pray. But the thing is, you want to become aware of God's presence, not trying to get him to be present. He already is present. He promised he'd never leave you or forsake you. He's there. But that conversational prayer brings you and your kids into an awareness of that presence. One mom sent me an email of a conversation that she had with her six-year-old son on the way to school. They were listening to some Christian song, and there was must have been a phrase in the song where it says, Lord, we seek you. And the six-year-old said, Mom, what does seek you mean? And she wrote, so I explained that it means as Christians we seek or look for God's wisdom, that we can pray for guidance, the six-year-old. But nobody's a full-on Christian. Mom, what do you mean by that? Six-year-old, I mean, we love God, but we aren't like Christ because we still have sin in our hearts. So when we pray, sometimes it's not even for the things God wants, like, God, can you please make my birthday come sooner? I thought, that's really deep stuff. There's this exchange going on in the car. That's Deuteronomy 6 happening in the swagger wagon. That's good stuff. You see, it's important that you have a relationship with Jesus as your kids are processing this, because you're the primary discipler. But you can't just, you know, look Christian, because the kids will see through that. Just because you, you know, pack a big Bible around or come to a particular room on a weekend with a bunch of other people, that doesn't get it done. You need to have your own relationship with Jesus. Experience him for yourself. How are you doing, mom or dad, responding to the instructions of the Lord in your life, his guidance in your life? You know, when you're faced with a point of trust or obedience, are you quick to respond to him? That's what your kids are watching for. Your relationship with Jesus will have great impact on your kids' relationship with Jesus. That doesn't mean you have to have it all together, you do everything perfectly. But it does mean that you need to make deliberate choices if you're going to parent your kids toward God.